This evening's scripture reading will be from the book of Matthew, chapter 5, verses 33 through 37. Matthew, chapter 5, verses 33 through 37. I'll be reading from the New American Standard. Again, you have heard that the ancients were told, "You shall not make false vows, but shall fulfill your vows to the Lord." But I say to you, make no oath at all, either by heaven, for it is the throne of God, or by the earth, for it is the footstool of his feet, or by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. Nor shall you make an oath by your head, for you cannot make one hair white or black. But let your statement be yes, yes, or no, no. Anything beyond these is of evil.
Good evening. Before we actually get into the study tonight, I did not realize that this is one of those snake handling congregations. For those that may be unaware, there was a snake that came in and Joe took it out. So I know the responsibilities of the shepherds is to guard us against the evil, and Joe saw the serpent and cast it out. So we should be grateful to him for that. Anyway, we're going to be continuing our study of the Sermon on the Mount this evening. We've been going through periodically looking at the teaching of Jesus here and making application to ourselves and seeing what Jesus is trying to teach us through the Sermon on the Mount. It's a sermon that's very challenging. It seems almost like an impossibly high standard, but it is filled with ideas that are important for us to be kingdom citizens and things that we want to remember as we go along. And so we're going to be talking tonight about the verses that were just read a moment ago, where Jesus talks about false vows, making false oaths, and some of the teachings related to that, and really what the heart of that issue is that Jesus is trying to get to, and what we can learn from that as far as making sure that our speech is honoring God, that we are speaking with integrity in the things that we say and as well as what we do. So Jesus begins in verse 33 by pointing them back to the law. You have heard that it was said, you shall not make false vows, but you shall fulfill your vows to the Lord. Now, once again, Jesus is not at odds with this statement. He's not trying to turn them against the law here, but he is pointing to what the law said. We'll get to some of the abuses that they've made in the future, or in just a moment. I think maybe I had updated this, and I don't know if it actually updated. Hold on one moment. All right, I think I got the right file here. Anyway, all right, so Leviticus chapter 19 and verse 12, we find the three verses among other, this is one among three that show the law concerning the swearing of oaths. So Leviticus 19 and verse 12 says, "You shall not swear falsely by my name so as to profane the name of your God. I am Yahweh." I think we might relate to that when somebody is trying to make a point and they may say something like, "I swear to God." I think we could agree that that's a rather flippant use of the name of God. And I think that's what Jesus or God is trying to accomplish there or communicate there in Leviticus chapter 19. Don't make false oaths using his name. And don't make his name common in that way. Numbers chapter 30 in verse 2. It says, "If a man makes a vow to Yahweh or swears an oath to bind himself with a binding obligation, he shall not violate his words. He shall do all according to all that proceeds out of his mouth." So there's a faithfulness to the vow that you make that Numbers is calling upon us to have there. If you make a vow, especially if you make a vow to the Lord, you be faithful to that. You hold fast to that vow, and you make sure you keep that vow that you have made. And then Deuteronomy 23 and beginning and in verse 21, Deuteronomy chapter 23 and verse 21 says, when you make a vow to Yahweh your God, you shall not delay to pay it, for Yahweh your God will surely require it of you, and it will be a sin in you. And so it becomes sin if we do not hold the vows that we make or fulfill the vows that we make. So we want to, the emphasis here is a truthfulness, first of all, in the things that we say. We want to be truthful. We want to speak truth. And we want to be faithful to the oaths that we make. And so we find that this is consistent with many of the principles that we find throughout the Old Testament in general. In Psalm 15, beginning in verse 1, for instance, the psalmist begins here with the simple question, who may sojourn in your tent, or who may dwell on your holy hill? Essentially, it's who can have fellowship or dwell with God. Certainly, we would want to dwell with God, and that's, you know, a good question to consider. He says in verse 2, he who walks blamelessly and works righteousness and speaks truth in his heart. And I think when he says speaks truth in his heart, it means we're speaking that which is true, and we're speaking out of faithfulness and integrity in our own hearts. We're going to be truthful in the way that we speak. We find later on in Hosea chapter 4 and verses 1 and 2 that the prophet had noted that there was a lack of faithfulness or truthfulness in the hearts of the people here. He says, Hosea chapter 4, beginning in verse 1, listen to the word, O Yahweh, O sons of Israel, for Yahweh has a contention against the inhabitants of the land because there is no truth or loving kindness or knowledge of God in the land. There is swearing of oaths, deception, murder, stealing, and adultery. They break forth in violence so that bloodshed follows bloodshed. And he goes on from there. But we find a lack of truth. And part of that is related to the swearing of oaths and the deceptions that is present there. We find in Ecclesiastes chapter 5 and in verse 4, Ecclesiastes chapter 5 and verse 4, we find a bit of wisdom from Solomon here. As he writes, when you make a vow to God, do not be late in paying it, for he takes no delight in fools. Pay what you vow. Again, there's a demand for truthfulness and faithfulness to the vows that you are making. And that is not exclusive to the New Testament or the Old Testament. We also find those very same ideas present in the New Testament. Ephesians chapter 4 and in verse 25. For instance, as Paul is calling upon the Ephesians to no longer walk as the Gentiles walk, he says, as he kind of begins to describe more of what that looks like, he says in verse 25, laying aside all falsehood, speak truth each one of you with his neighbor, for we are members of one another. And then the similar idea in Colossians 3 and verse 9 is we have been raised up with Christ. We should put to death those things which are of the earth. And then he says, do not lie to one another since you have crucified the old man. And so we find this principle all throughout the scriptures. God wants us to be people of truth. And he wants us to be people who speak truth. And he wants our speech, he wants us to speak with integrity. And so we find some of the teaching of the law, and especially what we find in the New Testament as well. And what Jesus is dealing with, though, as he is throughout the Sermon on the Mount in general, is an abuse of the law that God had made. Do not vow, or you shall not make false vows, but you shall fulfill your vows to the Lord. And I think as we look deeper at what Jesus says here, when he says, do not make an oath at all, either by heaven or for it is the throne of God, or by the earth, for it is the footstool of his feet, or by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king, he's relating some of the ways that they had concocted these distinctions that determined whether or not you had to honor a vow. And I think that they had shifted the emphasis here so that it's honoring vows that are made to the Lord. And if I make a vow, but it's not to the Lord, then I'm not obligated to keep that. And an example of that is in Matthew chapter 23 and beginning in verse 16, which is the sermon that killed Jesus, this sermon where Jesus
spends his time with the harshest rebuke of the Pharisees. He says, "Woe to you, blind guides, who say whoever swears by the sanctuary that it is nothing, but whoever swears by the gold of the sanctuary is obligated. You fools and blind men, for which is more important, the gold or the sanctuary that sanctified the gold? And whoever swears by the altar, that is nothing, but whoever swears by the offering on it, he is obligated. You blind men, which is more important, the offering or the altar that sanctifies the offering? Therefore, whoever swears by the altar swears both by the altar and everything on it. And whoever swears by the sanctuary swears both by the sanctuary and by him who dwells within it. And whoever swears by heaven swears both by the throne of God and by him who sits upon it." And so you see those distinctions that they've made and how they've essentially tried to reduce or created a formula that obligated to perform the oath if they said a certain thing, but if they said another thing, then the oath was not obligating. They were not obligated to keep the oath. Now, in our modern terms, we might say, "Oh, I was crossing my fingers. I made a promise, but I was crossing my fingers, so it didn't count. So I wasn't really obligated to keep that vow or that promise that I was made because you didn't know it, and so I was deceiving you, but I was crossing my fingers." And I think that's a very similar idea to what the Pharisees are doing. They've created this formula, and so if they swore by the gold of the sanctuary or by the offering of the altar, well, that's important, and you need to keep that. But if you only swear by the sanctuary, if you only swear by the altar itself, then you don't have to worry about that particular oath. And Jesus then shows the hypocrisy of that. What is more important? Is it the gold itself, or the sanctuary which sanctifies it, or the altar itself, or the sacrifice itself, or the altar that sanctifies the offering? And so he summarizes that teaching by showing that such distinctions are not proper. And as he says, the one who swears by the altar swears by both the altar and the things which are on it, and the sanctuary and the things that dwell within the sanctuary. And you can't swear by heaven without swearing by the throne of God and the one who sits upon it. And so they make these distinctions in their mind, but God sees through that, and he sees that there's a lack of truthfulness there, that they're not being faithful, they're not speaking with integrity, and that is really what Jesus is trying to get them to recognize. And so in both Matthew 5 and in Matthew 23, Jesus urged his listeners to be faithful in all their commitments. If you make a commitment, if you make a vow, you need to be faithful to keep that vow, because that is important to have integrity in your speech. We find in Proverbs 6, this kind of relates to what we were talking about in the first point there. Proverbs 6, beginning verse 16, "These are six things which Yahweh hates, and even seven are an abomination to him. A haughty eyes, a lying tongue, hands that shed innocent blood, heart that devises wicked thoughts, feet that hasten to run evil, a false witness who breathes out lies, and one who spreads strife among brothers." Of those seven things that are mentioned there, two of them relate with lying: the false witness and the lying tongue. Those are an abomination to God. And I think if we kind of apply that to what we just read there in Matthew 23, they are being false witnesses of themselves when they make an oath and they have this formula set up to where they really don't have to keep that particular oath. And then I wonder who all knew about these distinctions. And then when somebody makes the oath by the altar itself, then they're thinking, "Oh, I know what you're doing." Or if it was just an elite thing that nobody else was privy to, I don't know. But Jesus shows that that is not faithfulness, and that is not going to be pleasing to God in the first place. And so what Jesus is trying to do is to rebuke their hypocrisy and their abuse of the law that God had given,
And to teach that they involved God in any oath that they are making, in essence. As he says back in Matthew chapter 5 and beginning in verse 34, Jesus says, "Make no oath at all, for either by heaven, for it is the throne of God, or by the earth, for it is the footstool of God, or of his feet, or by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king, nor shall you make an oath by your head, for you cannot make one hair white or black." And so, any oath essentially that we make is including God. But then Jesus is teaching that any oath then is an oath to the Lord. And so he encourages his people to be truthful in all their statements. Verse 37, "Let your yes be yes and your no be no." Now, there's a question that comes up when we consider places like this or passages like this. Would it be wrong when you're in court and you have to put your hand on the Bible and you make an oath that I promise to tell the truth and nothing but the truth, so help me God? Are you being sinful when you say that? I don't believe that that would be the case. We do find cases where oaths have been made, and I don't think that that is sinful. We'll look at that in just a moment. We do find a similar statement, though, in James chapter 5 and verse 12. Where James says, "Do not swear either by heaven or by earth or with any other oath, but let your yes be yes and your no, no, so that you may not fall under judgment." Again, the emphasis there is on truthfulness in what we say. And so Jesus is not really condemning oaths altogether, but the hypocritical oaths, those that the Pharisees had created that they could make, and then probably to their own advantage, and then they could break them without having any consequence against them. Or so they thought. We do find, though, that even the law of Moses instructed an oath in the name of the Lord. Deuteronomy 10 and verse 20. In Deuteronomy chapter 10 and verse 20, says, "Yahweh your God you shall fear, and him you shall serve, and to him you shall cling, and by his name you shall swear." Now, we saw the passages earlier where it says, "Do not make false oaths," or do not delay in paying your oath. But so it's not the oath itself that is under consideration here. It is our faithfulness to the oath. And then we find that God has sworn an oath. We find in Hebrews chapter 6, verses 16 through 18, a text where God, in order to emphasize to Abraham the surety of his promise, it says that he swore an oath. In verse 16 of Hebrews 6, it says, "Abraham, or men swear by one greater than themselves, and with them an oath given as confirmation is an end of every dispute. In the same way, God, desiring even more to show to the heirs of the promise the unchangeableness of his purpose, guaranteed it with an oath, so that by two unchangeable things in which it is impossible for God to lie, we who have taken whole refuge would have strong encouragement to take hold of the hope that is set before us." So, he states earlier, when God made the promises, verse 13, to Abraham, since he could swear by no one greater, he swore by himself. And he goes on to emphasize the fact that God had sworn by himself as a confirmation of this. Did God need to make an oath? Well, no, he didn't. His word stands. But in an effort to give greater confidence to Abraham, he swore an oath to Abraham that these things would be accomplished that he had given him as a promise. "I will greatly bless you, and I will greatly multiply you." And so we find God putting himself under oath toward Abraham here on this occasion as he swears this oath of the promises that were made toward Abraham. And then we find in Matthew 26, verses 63 and 64, that Jesus speaks under oath in his trial, if you can call it a trial. It says in verse 63, Jesus kept silent, and the high priest said to him, I put you under oath by the living God that you tell us whether you are the Christ or the Son of God. And Jesus said to him, you yourself said it. Nevertheless, I tell you, hereafter you will see the Son of Man sitting at the right hand of power and coming on the clouds of heaven. And so, we find Jesus answering after being placed under oath. And then if you look at some of the apostles or the epistles of Paul, we find that he made a couple of oaths. 2 Corinthians chapter 1 and verse 23, for instance. 2 Corinthians chapter 1 and verse 23, where it says, I call God as witness to my soul that to spare you I did not come again to Corinth. And so in a sense, he's using God to emphasize his truthfulness in what it is that he's saying. I think the difference there with Paul and the Pharisees is Paul is actually being truthful in what he's saying there. He's not calling upon the name of God to emphasize something that's not true. He's trying to emphasize the truthfulness of what he had said. We also see in Galatians chapter 1 and verse 20, Paul says, what I am writing to you, I assure you before God that I am not lying. In trying to emphasize that he is being truthful in his words, he calls upon God to show that he is indeed telling the truth. And so, in all these, what we essentially see is whether we are making an oath or not, we should be truthful in all that we say. That's part of that's what Jesus means in verse 37 of Matthew 5 when he says, let your yes be yes and your no be no. When you say yes, you better mean yes. When you say no, you better mean no. Otherwise, don't say that at all. Be truthful in what you are saying. And again, the ultimate point that Jesus is trying to tell us here is that we need to have the integrity to say what we mean and to mean what we say. And that is incredibly important in today's day and age, right? Because we talk about the government and how we can't trust them any further than we can throw them. You talk about, you know, how do you know a politician's lying? Well, their mouth is moving. That's maybe not exactly true, but close enough, right? Because their reputation is to say all these things to get themselves elected, and then they never follow through with the things that they said they were going to do. What Jesus is calling upon us to do is if we say what we mean, and we mean what we say, that is integrity in our speech. And we're not trying to circumvent the reality by creating some kind of oath that we can tell that's going to get us off the hook. We're not crossing our fingers to make them believe something when we really didn't mean it. That's not integrity. But we say what we mean, and we mean what we say. And when we just stop right there, then that is a good place to be. We find in Revelation 21 and verse 8, John is describing the kind of people that are not going to enter into the kingdom of God. He says, the cowardly, unbelieving, abominable, and murderers, and sexually immoral persons, and sorcerers, and idolaters, and all liars will have their place in the lake which burns with fire and brimstone, which is the second death. Now, I think some of those we think absolutely belong there, but the liars are part of that list. They will be in the lake which burns with fire and brimstone. That's the end of those who do not have integrity in their speech. And then we want to avoid manipulative speech. Some might say, I swear to God, or I promise on my life, or cross my heart. And maybe what they're trying to do is resort to these kinds of things to give more credence to what they're saying, when otherwise what they're saying is unreliable. And if we want to boil down what Jesus is saying here when relating to some of those vows that we're making, our character should be such that we don't need that kind of speech for people to know that we're being truthful. You know, if a politician were trying to convince you of the reality of something and they have to resort to all these things,
because you know their reputation, right? But if you have a reputation for being truthful, for being honest, and for having integrity, you don't need to get up there and say, I swear to God, or I promise on my life, I cross my heart. Because they know that what you say is going to be truthful, and that you speak with integrity. And that's ultimately the point that Jesus is trying to make. We want to be faithful in our word. And when we make a commitment, we want to ensure that we are faithful to that commitment. Whatever that commitment may be, or whatever speech, words we are speaking, we want to make sure that we are speaking faithfully those words. And then recognize that faithfulness, and this is faithfulness in general, faithfulness to God, involves pure and faithful speech. In Proverbs 21 and verse 23, says, he who keeps his mouth and his tongue keeps his soul from trouble. Now when he says keeps his mouth and his tongue, he's not necessarily keeping it shut. He's talking about controlling it. It's the same thing that James describes in James chapter 1 and verse 26. When James describes the one who practices this pure and undefiled religion, he says, if anyone thinks himself to be religious while not bridling his tongue, but deceiving his own heart, this man's religion is worthless. Now that's important. God said this religion is worthless if we do not bridle our own tongue. If we do not guard what we say. If we do not ensure that we are speaking with integrity. He's going to say in a couple chapters later, James chapter 3, the damage that a tongue can do. It's the smallest organ in our body, and yet it's the most powerful organ in our body. How much damage has been done by somebody speaking an unkind word or an untrue word? And I want to suggest, we are talking about our speech, but that's not all that is applying here. That includes those things that we find on social media that we share. I don't know who it is that just has the time to sit around and concoct things that just are not true to spread around on social media. I don't know who does that, and I don't know why. But they do. We obviously all know that there's so much that's spread around on social media that's just not true. Now, if I share that, then I'm participating in a lie. So this applies not just to my words that come out of my mouth, but the words that I share, that I put out onto the internet, any form of communication, text messaging, emailing, any other communication, that's the same principle. And so we want to make sure if I'm sharing something or if I'm continuing to spread an idea that I've verified the truthfulness of it. And if I can't verify the truthfulness of it, don't post it. Because that's not
posting with
And so we need to recognize the importance of pure and faithful speech. And then we want to ensure that we're carefully thinking through the words that we speak. James 1 and verse 19 says, know this, my beloved brothers, but everyone must be quick to hear, slow to speak, and slow to anger. That doesn't mean we have to just talk very, very slowly. But we need to be slow to open our mouth to speak. If you read some books on communication, first of all, one of the ideas that you might learn is that the problem with communication is the illusion that it has taken place. We think communication has taken place when it hasn't. But then sometimes people are too often not listening to what the other person's saying, to understand what they're trying to say. They're trying to listen to know what to say next, or they're too busy formulating their next thought to listen, to think about what the other person is saying. That's not being slow to speak. You know, I've used this before, but there was a guy that I used to be at one of the congregations, that is at one of the congregations I used to work with, and he was very slow talking, and sometimes you just kind of want to just pull the words out for him. But he worked for the city council, and that was a skill that served him well. Because working with politicians, it was a skill that served him well. And so he was slow to speak. He spoke slowly, but he was slow to speak because he thought through the words that came out of his mouth. That is faithfulness in our speech. That's what it looks like. And so we want to be careful what we are saying. As James said, if we do not bridle our own tongue and deceive our own heart, our religion is useless. And so we want to carefully weigh the words that we speak. And never use God's name to strengthen a statement casually. Now, I don't think that that means that it's always wrong to use God's name to strengthen a statement, because Paul said already, we noticed, I assure you before God that I am not lying. We need to make sure that we are being truthful when we do that. And we're not just doing it casually to throw God in there. I think when Paul does it, he's doing it because there's a very serious matter at hand. This is not just, I'm gonna do whatever it is that you want me to do, or I can, I'll make sure your dog is fed when you're out of town. This is a matter, a spiritual matter that Paul ensures that they are, because his credibility is at stake, and he's writing to defend his own credibility so that they can appreciate the gospel. They can recognize that his gospel came from God himself, and therefore obey it. And so if we do use God's name in that way, don't ever let it be casual. Make sure that you recognize the weight of using the name of God into emphasize the truthfulness of your statement. And as we've already read in the Old Testament, do not delay to pay that vow. You ensure that you are being faithful in the things that you say. And then Proverbs chapter 10 and verse 19, in the abundance of words, sin is not lacking. Now, for a guy standing up here for however long I've been standing up here talking, the irony there is not lost on me. But the more you speak, the more you're susceptible to sin. And the answer is not to just be mute like the monks. The answer is to weigh your words, to be thoughtful about the things that you speak, to be truthful, to be people of integrity. Not just in what we do, but in what we say as well. And when we say something, we better mean what it is that we say. And so, Jesus is teaching us how to have integrity in our speech. Let your yes be yes and your no be no. Anything beyond these is of the evil one. We've seen before in John chapter 8 when Jesus talks to the Jews, he says, you are of your father the devil. He is a liar and has been from the very beginning. And so liars are of the devil. Anything beyond yes, yes, and no, no is of the evil one. And we don't want to be of the evil one, so let us be truthful in the words that we speak. Let us speak words that are full of truth and faithfulness and integrity. And we clearly see that we must not make any oath or promise that we do not intend to keep. That should probably go without saying. But you see the Pharisees, and in their day it didn't go without saying because they were doing those very things. Let that not be us. Let us be truthful in everything that we say
and displayed integrity not just in our speech, but in also in all that we do, you know, so that we can glorify God and we can show the world around us the faithfulness of God through our actions and through our speech as well. And so let's ensure that in all that we do, we are keeping truthfulness at the forefront of our hearts and our minds. And if there's any way in which we can be of encouragement to you, if we can help you in this, or if we can help you to be in other spiritual ways, we'd be glad to do so. If you need to obey the gospel, to have your sins washed away, to be raised up into new life, we'd be happy to help you to become a child of God. And if you are a child of God and maybe some way you've fallen short, or if you need our encouragement, we're here standing ready to assist you, to walk with you, to pray with you, to encourage you in all these things. We've talked a lot about the unreliability of the people around us, but how sweet it is to be able to trust in Jesus, who is always true and faithful. He's bidding you an opportunity to come to Him where you can have cleansing, you can have redemption, you can have restoration. And so if there's any way you need to respond to His invitation, we'd bid you to come while we stand and sing together.